In today's sermon, I'm going to be talking about sex within the context of marriage. If you become uncomfortable with this at any point, you are welcome to leave, and the rest of us are just going to assume that you are sauntering out for a cup of coffee. Talking about sex can push buttons in people, so we want you to take care of yourself in appropriate ways. Many of us regard marriage as something of a capstone in human experience. The ideal, we think, is to marry, have children, and live the good life. The fact that so many gay and lesbian couples want to marry shows how much marriage is idealized in our culture. Marriage is a sign of being socially accepted. A sad consequence of that is that single people sometimes feel like second-class citizens, especially in the church. It was not always like this. For roughly the first 1,500 years of church history, singleness was the ideal and marriage was second class. The ideal Christian did not marry and have children, but stayed celibate, single, and usually went off to live in a convent or a monastery. Celibate singles were considered to be the best kind of Christian. On this Sunday, when we talk about marriage, I hope we recognize that marriage is not the baseline human experience. The baseline human experience is actually singleness. All of us are born into the world as single people. And even if we marry, many of us will also die as single people. In fact, 44% of American adults are single. And I didn't calculate this out. It occurred to me sitting here this morning that I could have. I suspect that the percentage of singles in our congregation is actually pretty high. So let us remember that singleness is normal. Let us remember that the Christian church was founded by a single person. And let us remember that even though some of us might be married for most of our life, others of us are going to be single for most or all of our life. So in some ways, the baseline human condition is actually singleness, not marriage. When the planning committee started working on this sexuality series, they soon realized that we were going to have to make some choices every Sunday about what we talk about. Today's a good example of that. Marriage is a big topic, and in one worship service and one Sunday school class, we're not going to explore everything. Therefore, in light of our congregation's vision statement, I'd like to focus this sermon on marital intimacy as a spiritual practice. Our vision statement calls upon us to employ visual practices as one way of cultivating intimacy with God. A spiritual practice is anything we do that has the intention of enhancing our spiritual development. Several hundred spiritual practices are available to us, and marriage is just one of them. Again, we want to remember that singleness and single sexuality can also be a spiritual practice, and we'll talk about that more in a couple of weeks. We come to this topic of sex in marriage recognizing that many of us were first introduced to sex in harmful or shameful ways. Maybe our cousins showed us copies of Playboy magazine when we were in third grade. Maybe we were raped or sexually abused by an older person and were consequently forced to learn something about sex at a very early age. Perhaps we first saw acts of sexual intimacy on the internet. These experiences and others like them have instilled in many people pain, shame, or anxiety about sex. Consequently, Many Christians don't see sex as a cherished gift from God for which we can be thankful. More often, we see sex as a guilty burden. This makes it hard to view sex as a joyful spiritual practice. We have a great God, and one of the great things about God is the ability to heal and transform our painful experiences of sex, whether from abuse, pornography, casual sex, or adultery. I have witnessed healing happen in some people who have experienced these things. The healing does not come quickly, and it does not come easily, but it is possible in the grace and power of God. Even within a covenanted relationship, sexual intimacy can be complicated. One of the benefits of having the Song of Songs in the Bible is the honest way that it portrays the dance of intimacy. Sometimes the dance flows, and sometimes the dance requires hard work. And the Song of Songs, we'll see that in chapters 3 and 5. One person can be interested, and the other person, not so much. Any of a dozen things can make sex complicated. Work, children, laundry, cooking, mood, emotional distance, physical ailments, disability. Consider the following imaginary conversation. Can we now? Now isn't a good time. Okay, when is a good time? Oh, I don't know, maybe later. Fine. Whatever. And the couple pulls away from each other, a little frustrated, a little unfulfilled. Good communication is vital. People often say that women especially need good communication with their partner in order to feel better about the relationship. That may be true, but I would argue that men benefit from good communication too. Good communication might be harder for men than for women, but both men and women need it. If you are male and if you want to have rewarding, satisfying sex with your spouse, then one of the best things you can do is to become a better listener. Emphasize that word, listener and speaker. Now, this takes time and patience. Learning to listen and speak clearly with your spouse is part of what must happen if intimacy is to become a spiritual practice. Another feature of sex as a spiritual practice is keeping the covenant. The Bible has a number of different types of covenants, and one of those is marriage. All of the covenants in the Bible uphold fidelity or faithfulness to the covenant, to the relationship, as a primary part of what goes on in this covenant. In marriage, the covenant is partly to reserve sex with your spouse. On the occasions when I have worked with instances of adultery as a pastor, fortunately that has not happened very often. But when it has, this is the complaint that surfaces always in the aggrieved spouse. This angry feeling that the other person cheated on me and broke the covenant that I thought we had with each other. The wound of this runs deep. It's not easily healed. So, we want to hold on to the wisdom that sex flourishes best in the context of covenant. That doesn't mean sex is always going to be great and wonderful in the context of covenant, but it can mean that sex has this the potential, and often does, have this upwardly spiraling effect. So, as the sex gets better, the relationship gets better, and as the relationship gets better, the sex gets better as well. maintaining the covenant is a crucial feature of sex as a spiritual practice. Perhaps the main thing that turns sex into a spiritual practice is our purpose, the reason why we do it. I'd like to suggest that for a Christian couple, the purpose of sex is to communicate with God. You're not going to hear that message very often, but I'd like to propose it. The purpose of sex is to communicate with God. And in certain moments, in fact, to become briefly united with God, to become one with God. In 1 Corinthians 6:19, Paul says our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. The metaphor suggests that our body and the body of our spouse are places to worship God. Our bodies are a locus, a center of prayer and communication with God. So if our bodies are temples, and if a temple is a place to worship God, then our bodies are a context for connecting with God. All that we do and all that we are in this life happens in the context of a body, right? You can't be a human person without a body. We're this strange and wonderful mix of body and spirit. And this is true for both single people and married people. Of course, we don't have to engage in sex in order to connect with God through our bodies, but sex can certainly be one joyful and pleasurable way to connect with God through our embodied selves. During sexual intimacy, I often experience something of the presence of God. No one has to convince me that there is a deep connection between our sexuality and our spirituality. Married people know that sex can sometimes produce moments of profound transcendence. These brief but intense glimpses of eternity. In sexual ecstasy, we can experience something of God. This is where the communication with God happens at its most intense. To be sure, sex is not the only place where this can happen, where this does happen. We can also have moments of profound transcendence in prayer or worship while singing a song with other people in the congregation. But sex is definitely one place where this can happen. For Christians, sex is a way to commune with God. Chuck McNee, who teaches psychology at Trinity Western University in Vancouver, has researched the sexual satisfaction of Christian couples compared to the sexual satisfaction of non-Christian couples. He's a psychologist, if I'm remembering correctly. He found in his research that Christian couples experience a higher level of wonder, euphoria, bonding, blessing, arousal, and transcendence during sex than non-Christians do. He says, quote, "It appears that the peaks of sexual and spiritual connection among Christians were more holistic, involving full body gratification as well as emotional and spiritual highs," end of quote. He says his study demonstrates that peak sexual union requires mutual trust in the security of a committed relationship with another person, just as spiritual intimacy requires unquestioned trust in God. Many people in his study said they found the experience of sex unbelievable. Now, these are Christians talking. The after effects were transforming and empowering. This dynamic of sexual intimacy helps to explain why the death of a spouse can be so difficult for a Christian. You've lost one of your spiritual practices, right? one of your accustomed ways of communicating with God. It's tough. Covenantal sex can help us to become more spiritually mature. This happens when we take steps to serve our covenantal partner rather than using sex to gratify our own desires. Let me be clear here, especially to men. That word served, which I used just a moment ago, does not apply only to women. It also applies to us men. Serving and seeking the good of our spouse is something we men can grow in, both in bed and out of bed. Sex is never something to demand or exploit or abuse, because when you do that, it ruins the gift. Any hint of abuse, manipulation, or violence will chase intimacy right out of the relationship. True sexual delight, if you haven't discovered this yet, I invite you to try it out. True sexual delight has a selfless quality. It is an act of Christian discipleship to become a better lover of this person you are committed to in covenant, the person you are married to. Becoming a better lover can be one way of becoming a better disciple of Jesus Christ. You and I are walking, breathing temples of the Holy Spirit. In the context of covenant, sexual intimacy is one of God's wonderful gifts to us. It unites us to our spouse, and it also unites us to God. Let us cherish this gift.